It's talk radio that sounds like real life. Welcome to Big Mornings on the Big AM 1380.
It's 7:46, going on 7:47. Great to have you along with us. Interesting book we're going to be talking about here. It's Tales of the Gritty Side of Chicago. It talks about a number of different situations that have happened. Let me just tell you the name of the book, first of all, and you'll get the idea. It's Hugh Hefner's First Funeral and Other True Tales of Love and Death in Chicago, a gritty trip into Chicago's past, with plenty of great stories that are told by our next guest. She spent quite a bit of time during the 70s writing for the Chicago Tribune, and she's done plenty of other great writing along the way, and she joins us right now to talk about this book and the tales behind it. I think that's the key right here, because with a title like that, it's intriguing to find out what's behind the covers of this book. And she joins us right now on Big Mornings in the Big AM 1380. We welcome to the program Pat Colander. Pat, thanks for joining us. We appreciate it this morning.
Hi, Ted. Thanks for calling.
Great.
Excited to talk about the book.
Yeah, because it sounds like this is a fun book, because let's just face it, you were working, you were on the streets writing for the Chicago Tribune back around the time that a lot of these stories were busting out along the way. So really, it's a connection. I'm thinking that this is part, just tell me if I'm right here, Pat. The book is kind of part memoir, part journalistic, digging into a number of different situations, and part just a tale of telling about the city of Chicago and some sides of it that people really haven't heard about until this book has been published. Am I correct in assuming all three?
I think you are. A lot of these stories were written for the Chicago Reader. Mm-hmm. First, even though I was working at the Tribune longer than I worked at the Reader, but
right.
They came up because I was interested in two topics: theater and murder and mayhem.
Mm-hmm.
In Chicago at the time, and both were sort of connected in that everything was happening around Lincoln Park, Second City, North Avenue, and Wells. David Mamet had the St. Nicholas Theater over on Halsted. All these stories and people and situations were really within a radius of just a few miles.
Yeah, that's
from it.
That's incredible.
That was gentrifying.
Yeah, simply because we talk about a huge city. We're talking about a city, a metropolitan area of 10 million people. And really, a lot of what you're talking about is in a very confined, small space. Another thing is, too, you mentioned about theater in Chicago. And really, I think there are a lot of people, not just around the country, but even around the Midwest, that may not be aware that Chicago is just a wonderfully thriving theater community. We know about Second City, but there are lots of other theaters where actors can make a pretty decent living by just working in town in Chicago and being able to ply their craft there, right?
True, and that was not the case until the 1970s. And then Steppenwolf started. Mm. John Malkovich and a whole group from ISU came up. Roger Ebert and Larry Wywoody and Paul Tyner, these people are in the book also. They were hanging around North and Wells at a tavern that was called O'Rourke's, originally owned by one of their relatives.
Mm-hmm.
But it was a very creative time of growth and writing and the artist community just really coming up. And nobody was going to New York anymore, or not, they didn't have to. That was the beginning of it.
Yeah, and it's interesting, too, because, when it comes to that sort of generation of creativity, we're talking about Steppenwolf, but we're also talking about, because Second City came around in the 1950s, generated through the 60s. We know the people who ended up becoming becoming alumni of Second City as well. So was it really feeding kind of off of that? You know, if Second City can do it, we can do it with Steppenwolf. And the next thing you know, one thing after the other happens in Chicago, and now it's a town with a really thriving community. And a real, I guess the thing is, too, it's a cosmopolitan nature that you really can find in no other city in the world, right?
Right. I mean, and some people did go to L.A. Mm-hmm. and did go to New York, and some came back. You know, the Steppenwolf company has, you know, John Malkovich is still a member.
Sure.
Larry Metcalf is still a member. Gary Sinise. You know, they all, Gary Cole was over at a theater called Remains Theater. And then he became, of course, a huge television star.
Right.
And they come back frequently. Michael Shannon, even now, comes back. He's affiliated with the Wild Orchid, or the Red Orchid Theater, near North and Wells. But it's been a very strong community, and I think that writers had support, theater people had support. You know, there was enough money around at the time to invent things, and it was a really interesting time.
Yeah, and I'm thinking with a lot of the actors that you're speaking of that end up emerging from these theaters and moving on to other things in film and television on the stage elsewhere outside of Chicago, they tend to see the theaters that they were basically raised in Chicago as being like
right.
no different than an alma mater, you know, for, you know, for
right.
somebody who goes to college, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah. So
that's true.
Yeah. So it's a wonderful opportunity to come back, give back, and really encourage the people that are there now and say, hey, you can do this too. Let's talk a little bit about
right.
the book now, because I know True Tales of Love and Death in Chicago, you know, Hugh Hefner's first funeral. I know that people are probably curious about that title. So, but the thing is, you cover a lot of different areas when it comes to Chicago's past, when it comes, because you mentioned about theater. And tales of nefarious tales of murder, whatever the case may be with that. One thing that intrigues me is the women behind the women of Playboy magazine, because I know that, you know, because for a lot of people who are not aware, Chicago was basically point one when it comes to Playboy, because, you know, Hugh Hefner got it started in town, the first Playboy club in Chicago. And then really when it comes to the Playboy mystique, the Playboy tradition, if you will, it started in Chicago. But the thing is, a lot of people don't know, you know, they know about the women involved with Playboy, because basically we're talking about bunnies and centerfolds, but there are other women involved too, huh?
There were other women behind the scenes. And the story of his first funeral was a woman that committed suicide who was kind of his right-hand lieutenant. And this was all took place in the late 70s and early 80s.
Mm-hmm.
But what Hefner was doing at the time was he was getting the L.A. mansion sort of set up,
right.
and he was going to move out there. He felt that he was being harassed by the federal prosecutors and U.S. Attorney's Office here. And one of the what happened was Bobby Arnstein was brought in on a cocaine charge. She had a boyfriend. They had gone to Florida together. She maybe brought some coke back, but she felt, you know, that she was being unfairly harassed and targeted on account of the federal prosecutors really wanting to get to Hefner.
Mm-hmm.
And she finally committed suicide just before this was all going to come down, and she could possibly go to jail. And he ended up being a pallbearer at that funeral because Bobby Arnstein's mother asked him to.
Mm-hmm.
And it was really the first time he had gone to a funeral because his friends were young. You know, he had not had friends or family die. And he was probably in his 40s by then. So, in a way, he was kind of lucky that he hadn't been to a funeral yet.
Indeed. Pat Kohlander joining us. She is the author of Hugh Hefner's First Funeral and True Tales of Love and Death in Chicago, joining us on Big Mornings on the Big AM 1380. You also mentioned in the book about something that I think a lot of us may have forgotten about, because let's just face it, when the Tylenol, when the Tylenol, that situation in Chicagoland, when that was tainted, and it turned out a number of people died from that, that a lot of people were thinking that Tylenol is not going to be able to survive that. Here we are 30 years later, Tylenol's, still cooking. Let's just look at it that way. But that's one of the things you deal with in the book, tracking down the Tylenol killers. And so obviously that's something that intrigued you along the way to the point of writing about it, huh, Pat?
Yeah, it was originally started its life as a book proposal that Harper and Row had asked me to write. Mm-hmm. And I interviewed some people at the time, but it was, for one thing, you could not get to the victim's family, okay. Johnson and families. Johnson & Johnson had been very, very good and spent a lot of money trying to make things right away.
Mm-hmm.
And had a recall of Tylenol. It was such an important product to them. And James Burke eventually, who went on Phil Donahue, who was the Oprah of the time, and he went on 60 Minutes, and he was just a very, very good PR man. And I see him in this case still being taught in college classes right now, the way they handled it was so terrific.
Yeah.
But seven people did die, and the killer was not ever, there was nobody ever really indicted, or and I don't think there ever will be.
Mm-hmm.
But there are two prime suspects in the case, and it was interesting to me that one of the suspects was a more blue-collar type guy and who had already been in jail once at the time that they questioned him about the murders. And the other was more of a white-collar criminal, more, did credit card fraud, tried to do money transferring. He was a computer geek. He's still around.
Mm-hmm.
I was able to do a deeper profile of that whole case and its odd characteristics. And also, I remember how scary it was.
It was, indeed.
How people were checking their, were checking their pills and returning them. And some may not have, but it was also really, the other odd thing about it was that some of these murders took place in, like, Elk Grove Village.
Mm-hmm.
Others, there was one North Avenue and Wells Street again.
Yeah.
A flight attendant picked up tainted Tylenol down there.
Mm.
So it was like all over the place in Chicago, and nothing like it has ever happened again, thank God.
Indeed.
But it was changed the industry. I think, we started to recognize that our lives were vulnerable to terrorists, I think, really.
Yeah, that's the story.
With that incident.
Indeed. Hugh Hefner's First Funeral and Other True Tales of Love and Death in Chicago. The author, Pat Kohlander, talking with her on Big Mornings and the Big AM 1380. If you want to find out more about the book, go to Eckhart's, Eckhart's Press.com. That's Eckhart's Press.com. And they could probably pick it up at the usual suspects when it comes to books, right? Amazon and all that?
Yeah. It went up on Amazon a couple days ago.
That sounds great. Well, Pat, this sounds like an intriguing book. I'm looking forward to digging into it. Thanks for joining us. We appreciate it, ma'am.
Thank you, Ted.